Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
December 23, 2021. Is that right? Yeah, I guess it is. According to that thing we call a calendar, allegedly, and here we are, the show you were looking for. Anyway, this is a Thursday, as I speak to you live, but of course, most of you will catch the podcast. I know this, and grateful to have you along, no matter whoever, whenever, and wherever you are. Anyway, Jordan Maxwell is with me. Do I need to give an introduction? Not really, but I will tell you this. There's only one website that belongs to Jordan Maxwell. It is jordanmaxwellshow.com, all one word, jordanmaxwellshow.com. You can join the research society over there. You can send Jordan an email. You can contribute to Jordan's well-being, all at one place, jordanmaxwellshow.com. A lot of things there in the free or public area, but there's also the private club we discussed last time. Anyway, let's get straight to it because you guys sent in questions, and this is the last time I'm going to get to speak to Jordan for the year. He has his birthday party coming up, and that is on the 28th, last I heard, still. And he won't be here for the last Thursday in December, and I'll talk to him after he gets through with his birthday party and everything and see when it is we can bring him back and talk about some other things. But anyway, Jordan, how are you tonight, sir?
Well, I'm still here.
a victory in and of itself, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I think so.
So, you know, a lot of people make those statements about one more day where I'm above ground as opposed to below, or one more day where I'm still breathing. Anyway, it is a pleasure and an honor to have you here tonight. And I actually want to start with some unusual things. You guys have sent in questions, and by the way, you can still do that if you want to message me on Twitter. I'm at O'Shelly Effect on Twitter if you're hearing me and have no idea. At O'Shelly Effect on Twitter, or you can go into the live chat room at O'Shelly.com, which is part of the Listen Live page, and either anonymously or with a name if you like, drop questions in there that are relevant. And I will get to all of them in the second hour as best I can. Right now, I've got space for questions. So if you guys want to add some more, now's the time if you're listening live. Anyway, the thing is, Jordan, you know, often we've had these discussions about how many years you've been talking about all of what you've been talking about. And you're going to be 81. And that's, well, you know, that's considerable more years than me on this earth for sure. And I think back to how different things were, even though I'll be 50 in a few months. That's it. I'll be 50. But so 31 years difference between you and me. A lot more experience, a lot more time here. But I think back to even when I was 20, and I say to myself, you know, the world was a different place 30 years ago. That's for sure. The world was a different place. America, whether it was a different country or not, certainly felt like it was. And I lived through a time when things were just different. So I want to think back to when you started talking about all this, when you started understanding the grand deceptions, when you started to understand the symbols, when you started to talk about it, and maybe you understood it long before that, I don't know. But when you started talking about it, you were, you had to be a different person because, 20 years old, nobody who lives, you know, to be more than 20 in a couple of years is the same person they were when they were 20 years old. So, and they don't see the world the same for sure. The world changes around them for sure. So I'm curious, what were things like at the time you started talking about this? What was, you know, 20-year-old Jordan Maxwell's view of the world? And how has it changed? I mean, we'll get into how it's changed, but let's lay the groundwork here. What was it like when you started talking about these things?
I started talking when there was no problem at all for me because I realized I was onto something that nobody else had seen and nobody else knew anything about. And so that's what intrigued me, because I wanted to get further in. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I began to learn certain things about certain people. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to know. And the more I wanted to know, the more I learned. And so I began to see that people did not know the answer to life. If you're a child and you ask an adult a question, normally the adult, you would think, would try and answer in adult language as possible. But I know that adults do not know the answer to anything. And I realized that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way the world was. Nobody knew anything. Well, and we were all learning.
Right. And you told a story on this show before about, you know, being talking to a minister, I think, and having a realization about what it is they saw. And let's give people a little bit of context here, because if you go back 61 years from the time I'm speaking, we're talking about 1960. And 1960 was in a decidedly different era than the one we're in now.
Yes, very much so.
You're talking about the election year where Kennedy's elected before he's assassinated. You know, President Eisenhower gives his farewell address. Okay, yeah. I mean, and that's just politics. Meanwhile, religion and the way religious institutions worked was seemingly different from what I can read. Now, I wasn't alive yet, but I mean, the religious institutions, they had a different way of working. The government didn't seem to be a constant presence in a lot of people's lives as far as
it was
the,
not.
You know. So, I mean, but that's a whole different world, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what I was trying to tell you. Mm-hmm. There was no concern for federal government. The federal laws, nobody cared about. It didn't seem that anybody was bothered with the federal government. Mm-hmm. It was only the state in which you lived.
Well, the state in which you lived, I mean, your local people, right? I mean, you know, the school boards existed. I mean, there were police. And we know in the 60s there were troubles in many places. But even so, you were dealing with people on a local level. And in fact, even going and searching for information, here's another thing. You know, when you couldn't get the answers just by asking the adults, and at 20 years old, let's be frank, you're an adult, but it's you're not an experienced adult, right? So you may turn to older adults and ask them about things. Like, I mean, just a for instance, this is around the time you might go and get your first apartment. You might, you know, you might have bought a car already, but you don't know what to do once you have to go and deal with the car breaking down or things like this. So you ask older adults. And I mean, I'm being as simple about this as possible. And you might ask them deeper questions. How do I get through all of this? What do things mean? And as you turn to people in 1960... you could almost not blame them for not having access to all the information, you know. They were doing their jobs, whether they were a priest or a cop or whoever. They were doing their jobs. They didn't necessarily know how the whole world worked, because they just needed to know how their little piece of the world worked, you know. And it's kind of a different time, like I said. So I'm curious, like, you mentioned having this discussion with a minister. And realizing, and I don't remember all the details of the story, but I know you realize that this guy doesn't know anything. And you start to realize this about some of the adults in charge, even though, yeah, you're a young adult. You start to come to that conclusion. And also, there's a bit of arrogance in youth, honestly, where you think you know stuff because, you know, you're now an adult, but you don't automatically get that wisdom. And you would have had to venture to local libraries and things if you were me at the age of 20. Of course, my age of 20 comes later than yours. But still, when I'm 20 years old, there's no internet. There's no, you know, mass communication. There's, very hard to find any information outside of the very standard things that they taught you in school, so to speak, right?
That's right.
And you start realizing that those people teaching you in school, they knew that 2 + 2 = 2. But, you know, and they might have known, don't mix these two chemicals together for science class. Okay. But they didn't know much. You didn't have to know much, and you kind of got along. So it's a whole different era where they didn't have access to a great deal of information. I mean, I grant that, you know, we had the printing press, you know, you had your newspapers, you had some electronic media, but it was very limited. It didn't dominate things the way it does today, where you're just flooded with not only the ability to get information, but, you know, you're flooded with a lot of crap too that you bombarded with back then. So, I mean, give somebody an idea who has no idea about what a time like that might have been and how it was gathering information that, you know, again, you found rarity in, gee, if I sort of decode this or that, nobody else knows this stuff. They didn't have you to turn to on the internet to go start and get a head start on the information. You know, what was that like kind of discovering this and realizing that, you know, yes, indeed, I maybe respect my elders, but I also know they don't know much. What was that part of it like?
Well, that was true. And it was very difficult for me because I could see that they didn't know, and I could understand that they didn't know because the parents didn't tell them, mm-hmm. and their world that they lived in didn't tell them anything. And so I realized that you go along to get along. You just go and think whatever you want, and the government doesn't care what you think, and the government is not in your life. It controls the general order of things, and of course you don't antagonize government by challenging them, but you don't have to worry about them. You don't have to worry because the communist Marxist Leninist system that we have in America today, which is a communist dominated system, we all are told to shut up, wear your mask, go home, stay 6 foot apart from anybody else, wear your mask, and keep your mouth shut. Because if you know anything, that's the best piece of advice you can get. Don't talk about anything of any importance. Nobody wants to hear it, especially the government. The government does not want to hear. And so they are visiting themselves to see what it is you're thinking. And I remember my uncle bought me a chemistry set. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest one you could buy. And I've never seen a chemistry set like it. It was a big, big set. Mm-hmm. And he bought the whole thing for me. And I remember that when I ran out of chemicals, I could go to the local drugstore, and all the chemicals were out on display, all of them. Mm. And anything I wanted, I could just pick it up. I don't have to ask anybody. I just pick up what I wanted, what I needed for my chemistry set, and pay for it and go out and leave. And nobody would say anything. Nobody questioned anything. Today, they would have a hissy fit if you act like you're going to think and you're going to question what you're doing. They're going to have a fit, and they're going to consume you as a Nazi or as a communist or some kind of an agent of crime in America today. But that's not what's happening. Mm-hmm. I could go into a drugstore and get the chemicals I needed, I wanted. I could do that with no problem whatsoever without even thinking about it. I could just drink and walk in, and it would be lined up on the walls, all the chemicals in my chemistry set, and I could get all the chemicals I wanted. And today, that would be ludicrous. Today, the government would go out of its mind to let anybody
today
just get anything they wanted.
Yeah, today, at the very least, right, the Homeland Security would be contacted. You'd be placed on lists if not, directly contacted. You know, and I'm saying contacted, but they show up sometimes with guns and everything else to question you, find out what were you doing, why were you purchasing this chemical, what do you intend to do with it. All over
that's
you.
Exactly now, right. That's exactly right.
Now, look,
and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. There was none of that. There was none of the concern that government would show. No concern the government ever showed about what you were doing, about what you wanted.
Well, you didn't see it. You didn't see it, right? I mean, look, we know that.
No, you don't see it.
Like Hoover's FBI, we know that the FBI would definitely track things that they thought was suspicious. You know, we know that the FBI might have read your mail. We know the FBI might have tapped your phone. But they usually, if they didn't find anything after a little while, they left you alone. I mean, you know, and it would be for odd things, like really out of the ordinary things.
Right.
Like, you know, you join the Communist Party, maybe they start tracking you. Okay. And that was kind of accepted, that if you were going to do things that, you know, were a bit odd, that maybe they would check into you. But they didn't, you know, go breaking down your doors and raiding your house.
That's right.
So it was, you know, almost acceptable, right, at that point. I mean, like I say, and like you said, they were present, they were there, but it wasn't this totalitarian, you know, clamp down. Now we know every single thing you're doing, all of your associates. You know, I mean, it actually reminds me, because, again, I was born in the 70s. It reminds me more of what they told me about the Soviet Union, where... You know, no matter what
that's
you
right.
do, somebody's going to inform on you. And I feel like that today. And when do you think that became obvious exactly? I mean, I can tell you that I feel as though it went into high speed after 9/11, Jordan. Really, it
yes.
did. But it was there before that. So, I don't know, maybe you could help me figure out when, you know, all of a sudden you noticed, oh, well... This federal government, that might be something that I could look at, you know, that wasn't really relevant to my day-to-day life. When did it start to become, oh, no, I know these people are present every day in everything I do? When did that change in your mind?
It began to change, I think, around the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to perceive that the whole entire government of the United States of America is becoming communist, is becoming a communist state. And I hated that. I hated to see my country destroyed in front of my face. And it was going to be very difficult to believe whatever you want and do whatever you want, because you're going to be watched and concerned about everything you say and do. And so I got to the point where I don't care anymore. I used to care, but I don't care anymore about what people think of me, about what people say about me. I could not possibly care less because I am concerned that my government is now in the hands of communists and criminals, and they want to destroy my freedom. They want to destroy my ability to look at any piece of information I want and think about it. That's the one thing you don't want to do in America today, is think about a subject that nobody's interested in. Mm. And so that's the one thing you'll get in trouble for, thinking about questions that nobody wants to hear. And so that's when it began to change for me. Once I saw Kennedy was assassinated and nobody went to jail, nobody went to prison. There was no investigation as to who killed the president. of the United States murdered him. Right. And there was no one that went to jail. No one went to prison. There was nobody even talking about that. Nobody cared. It seemed like nobody cared to me because I didn't see anything happening to anybody. And so I just be quiet and shut up and don't ask any questions.
Right, but people were beginning to ask questions. And yeah. See, this is what I point to a lot of times in my shows when you're not on, Jordan, is I explain that being that I was born in the 70s, right, it is natural for me to understand that I can't trust the government. I can't trust the institution. You know, because sometimes I have people on that are older than me, like you, and I say, you know, I really envy a time period you lived in when there was still the possibility that you lived in a free country in your mind, because I don't believe I ever had that in my mind, that this was a free country at all. And I think I was ahead of the curve among a lot of the, you know, a lot of the kids. I started to learn to read newspapers in the 70s. You know, my father taught me. I was reading in 1975 newspapers, right? Even though I was born in 72. And if you read the newspapers in 1975 and took that as even a hint at what the outside world was like and what the United States was like and what our government was doing, they were still talking about Watergate. They were still talking about the different committees in Congress that were looking at, oh, gee, we had a CIA that was doing stuff. We didn't know. You know, this is what I saw in the local newspaper I was taught how to read. What do you expect me to think of this? You know,
that's exactly right.
So, and
what were you expecting me to think about this?
Well, but you didn't start that way. See,
when
you started reading, and in the general world, now I'm going to take you before you were 20, if you don't mind. But when you started to read about this place, they gave you this idea, you know, and they used to say it to me when I was a kid, but I was like, yeah, right. you can be anything. You can do anything because this is a special place in the world. This is a place where, you know, no one will oppress you. Even if you're different, even if you don't really fit in, it's okay because you're here. Even if you you want to worship differently, if you want to speak differently, if you want to, you know, have customs that maybe would be strange to everyone else around you, it's okay. Because this is a free country. And that was the general consensus. Like, pretty much, if you're not harming other people, right, then nobody's going to come and bother you. And they would tell me this as a kid. And I do mean adults of all sorts, whether they were just, you know, everyday people or they were supposed to be teachers or... again, priests or
authority,
any authority, right, would tell me this, and I could not even begin to believe them. But if I were born 20 years earlier, if I were born 30 years earlier, number one, they were still saying the same thing. But number two, you might have believed them. And I want to know, did you believe them to begin with, that, you know, hey, you know what, I'm in a great place. I can get through the world as I see fit. I have the ability, because I live in a wonderful place, that I can choose to become a rich man, or you could be anything. You could be the president. You could, whatever it is, with hard work, I could decide to make myself into whatever I wish. Did you have that attitude as a kid?
Yes, I certainly did. I realized that I could do whatever I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that the government as we know it today was not in existence. There was no slavery and communism and all the Marxist-Leninism of Hitler. There was none of that. There was total freedom to do anything you wanted to do. And I never had any problem with anybody but the church. The church always condemned everything I wanted to do. Hmm. I wanted to ask questions. I wanted to know. I've always wanted to know. And therefore, I have always asked questions and realized that nobody seems to know or care about the questions I have. Nobody seems to know or care about. They just stay away from him. He's trouble.
Well, okay, but hang on a second, because let's stay with the church for a minute. Even in that case, right, what they always told me, but it didn't quite turn out like they told me again. It's a little different than the view of the government, though, because with the church, right, what would they tell you? Look, if you don't like this church, it's not as though we have a state religion, right? You can go and find a church that maybe agrees with you, asking questions. Now, they told you that, and I heard that too, you know. But again, I had a different point of view than yours, because being born in the 70s, what are you going to do? But still, there was still that idea that, look, you don't like this church? All right, but find another place. It's okay. You know, you're not going to, like, lose your home. We're not going to put you on a list. We're not going to decide that maybe, you know, secretly some religions are more acceptable than others. So long as you're actually involved in a spiritual practice of any kind, you know, we had this thing called the Constitution, right? Which meant that there was no way that the government, right, in quotes, was to have a say in what you chose to believe, in what you chose to practice, in what you chose to say. I mean, I know that the freedom of the press is the only thing ensconced really in the Constitution that is a business. But in a way, I look at many of these organized churches as businesses, and quite frankly, they're protected by the very First Amendment as well. So the idea that you could still, you know, it's a free country. You heard that a lot.
God, I heard that all the time. It's a free country.
So you could choose to go to another church and go find another. And you know what? You don't like any of these churches? Maybe you'd even be able to start one. You don't have to, right? They would tell you it's okay. Maybe you bring some people together, and you can become your own little group, and it's okay. Because as long as you're not hurting anybody, you're fine, right? I mean, wasn't that sort of the general attitude that you got? I mean,
yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. As long as you were not hurting anyone, as long as you weren't hurting anyone, then you were going along with the rest of humanity. And it's just that you had a question that you weren't answered, but the government was not involved in frightening you and taking away your freedom, putting you in jail, and causing you to be frightening and fearful. Right. And that's what made America the place it was. People were coming from all over the world to America, which represented freedom, and freedom to be who you want to be, and whoever you are, and whatever you believe, you can come to America and be free. But not anymore. Today, America is a communist-dominated criminal empire. It's a criminal empire that we are now living in. And I have met some of the criminals that control America. I knew some of them, and they were criminals.
See, now, you and I have talked off air, actually, about, so I'm not going to bring that stuff up because it's not for the public to know. But you've actually named a few names to me, and yeah, you did know people that were certainly in control of of some things. I mean, I'm not saying that they were really making the decisions even. I'm just saying that they certainly had the ability and the access to make really big decisions. Some of the people that have met with you. And I almost find that strange. I mean, you and I have also talked about some of the authorities in religion. That, and again, we didn't talk about it publicly, but I just want to say it's a wide range of people that that you've encountered that you would think if you put all these people in a room at one time, okay, you could say that, you know, you had a good counsel on the people that were controlling a lot of things on the planet. And, you know, that's the other thing, is that the monetary system, which we all know changed quite a bit with the central bank that was created in 1913.
The central bank in America was founded, I found out, by the Communist Party, USA. The Communist Party founded the central bank. Mm-hmm. And so once I found that out, I already knew we were in for trouble. We were going to be completely consumed by trouble, because I know people want America dead. They want America shut down. And why? Because of so much freedom and liberty. And so nobody, all the kings and rulers and mobsters, want no one to be free. They want to be able to scare and frighten everyone. And they used to say, we don't care if people love us as long as they respect us. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, well, I don't respect or love you. I hate communism. I hate criminals. I don't mind abiding by the law that I have to, but I hate having to be subjected to the communist system.
Well,
and this is where we are.
Well, and here's the thing, right? And I've said on the show, and I know somebody's going to mention this as they're listening, that that I have way less of a problem with the organized criminals that I've encountered on the streets. I have way less of a problem with those people because you decide to get into business with them. And if you do, look, you take what comes along with it. And quite frankly, that's consistent. You know, innocent people who never signed up for it are not swept into their criminal conspiracies. They're not big enough to do that. They do what they do, and most of the time, people volunteer. You know, you decide you want to get into debt with them gambling. Listen, you made a problem yourself, right? You know,
you're right.
This is the way I see it. It's almost like they believe in people's freedoms more than the people that are supposed to be, what, defending them. Because you don't go and get into business with them, generally speaking, they don't bother you. Okay? They really don't.
I agree. You're right.
You know, you get into business, you owe them money, you take something from them. Well, you know, what can I say? You made a mistake. Okay? But what it comes down to is you got to actively make a choice to get in there. These other people, by design, feel as though they're entitled to just rule and make decisions and make you part of their, well, you know, their shell games that allow them to consolidate power and money and everything. So, again, I want to go back to the 1960 and before time period with you and say it seems to me like people that were around then and functional at that time and, you know, trying to make a living and just trying to do what you said, which is to go along, to get along, and just, you know, on a daily basis, they had their lives to lead. They weren't concerned about the rest of the world because they were busy. The monetary system, the way things worked, even though it's been the same plan, you know, for over 100 years now, with the Federal Reserve being in place since 1913, and we could talk about all that, fractional reserve banking. I don't want to belabor that with you because you've done discussions about the banking system before. Somebody can go find that somewhere else. Okay. I want to ask you this. It's different now, okay, and not just because things are more electronic today, okay? Not just because the computers run the finance, which is another issue that has gotten stacked on top of this, but it was different when you were younger, Jordan, wasn't it? I mean, it seemed you could earn some money and you might be able to keep some of it and, you know, get some value for it. And however you earned it, it just seemed to be a whole different system. And that system changed a lot, again, since the 1970s, where I was observing it. And slowly but surely, I feel as though everyone has just increasingly gotten squeezed over time, but really slowly, very much like a good constrictor snake killing its prey. They don't squeeze their prey to death, folks. They let them exhale, and then they tighten the grip. And they let them exhale, and they tighten the grip. This is the methodology. You let them exhale, they get a little smaller, you squeeze a little more. And I feel as though that's collectively what's been done in the financial system my whole life, Jordan. I mean, again, being born in the 70s, I don't think you can blame me for seeing it that way. But was it like that before I got here? I mean, 1960, when you were a kid, you know, trying to just, you know, be a kid at some point. I mean, I can imagine Jordan Maxwell was a kid at some point, right? So, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine because I've always thought of you as this guy who's older than me. And I only encountered you, you know, after you'd already been speaking about these things many, many years. But, I mean, can you explain how that changed between the time you're a kid and I'm a kid? Or is it just an illusion? Was it actually not any different? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. Think about it, because I realize that the general population of America have been frightened to death, and we've been frightened into doing what we do. Mm-hmm. We're told you're going to go to prison, you're going to go to the judge, you're going to be in judgment, and you're going to go to jail. If you do anything with the government, you're going to go to jail. And none of that was ever talked about. When I was a kid, I never heard anything about anybody going to jail, not anybody going to jail, but doing something in the government. And so that was one thing that is generally different. People are more dishonest today. They are trying to save what is theirs today. They're trying to conserve America's freedom. And it can't be done because the people who are in power today are criminals. They are wanton criminals. And you have to look at them as if they were notable criminals. Right. And we are coinciding our lives with them. And like you said, we make the problem that we are living under. Incidentally, when you're deciding to go with somebody in their company, then you made the decision.
Right.
And when you make the decision, you had the right. This is another thing. We had the right to question anything. Right. When we were little and young, we had the right to question anything. We could question the mayor, the governor. We could question the Senate. You could question anything.
Well, you wrote these people a letter.
Nothing.
Yeah, you even wrote these people a letter. You might actually get a response, you know, where they actually paid attention to what you had to say, which is, here's a huge question, right? And I don't know if anybody's ever asked you this before, but do you think it started to change around the time that whole general atmosphere where you had the right to question, you had the right to be who you were, you would be left alone? Do you think that started to change right after you were 20, like as you were going through the decade of the 60s? Because this to me, and again, this is because of my personal lens, right? If I'm born in 1972, the Vietnam War is still happening. I saw it come to an end in the newspapers, right? Because I was learning to read in 75, it ended in 76. So, you know, to me, there was a war from the moment I was born. But, and for you, you were born at a time when World War II was coming to an end. But do you think it changed during the 60s? Because all of a sudden, I mean, and this is a different thing, questioning, and then people that got in trouble for, you know, going on the streets and protesting and whatnot, I am on their side, honestly, about Vietnam. I certainly think as though that was a massive criminal enterprise, but I didn't live through it from you know, the BS beginning that they told us about, the Gulf of Tonkin, which wasn't the beginning. Truth is that the Vietnam War actually started closer to the end of the Second World War, best I can reckon, okay? And that's, you know, if you go and read the CIA files, you'll get even more confused, honestly. But you can't say that it started in the 60s, but the American public got aware of it in the 1960s, and it escalated, and it became a problematic. And today, we know that at least 58,000 men were counted as dead there. The Korean War took more people, even, from our side of the equation. You know, so that had gone on. But do you think it started to change in the era of the Vietnam War becoming something that the public was aware of, and the American people, through the draft and all that, had become, you know, involved in, whether they wanted to be or not? Is that where it started to change as far as people's perception, you think?
It may very well might have happened that way, because the Vietnam era did create quite a problem for the government, because everyone was beginning to assume the government was lying through its teeth.
Right.
About space flight, UFOs, aliens. They were lying to the people. They are still lying to the people about this UFO and the extraterrestrial lies. And so the thing is that there's no way we're going to know for sure about anything, because they are lying through their teeth about everything.
Right.
I remember someone in government in NASA was asked, did you people lie about going to the moon, or did you people lie about aliens? And the answer was, we lied about everything. Anything that you have ever heard from the government was a lie. We lied about everything.
Right.
Well, then that just that brings into question all the stuff they told us about freedom and liberty. Was that a lie too? Yes, it was a lie.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we're going to throw you into prison and teach you it was a lie. Because in totalitarianism, which we never had in America, we were not totalitarianists. Totalitarian implied that we totally understood the problems of trying to control the whole human race.
Right.
And that's what we have today, the control of the whole human race. All the countries of the world are now suspect, all countries in the world are now trying to live and do their thing, but government has become absolutely a criminal enterprise that keeps strangling and frightening the people. And that's the more we try, the more we stay awake, the more we're beginning to see.
Right. So, but you would agree with my analogy, I guess, about the snake, which constricts upon people, because they couldn't necessarily do this change from the time period where you had a sense of freedom to what it is we're dealing with today. I don't think that could have been done overnight. You know, if one day there were nothing but soldiers controlling the streets everywhere, there would have been a massive reaction.
For change for you to believe in, we got a black president. For the change, you need to believe in. And so you need a change. What we didn't realize is he was talking about a change from the American form of government to a communist form of government. That was Obama. For the change you need. And this is what we call what we're doing now is destroying freedom. We're destroying the whole idea of conceptual freedom. Do anything you want, and to be anything you want, you're going to have to ask permission. If you don't ask permission, you're going to be dealt with accordingly.
It was done slowly, though. They didn't just, you know, again, it wasn't like, here you go, boom, flip the switch, it's on. it had to be done slowly. And I think, you know, people talk about boiling the frog, right? I mean, that's the analogy they use all the time. How do you do it? You turn the heat up very slowly so the frog doesn't try and jump out of the pot. And I believe that that's an apt analogy as well, because this is how it gets done.
I do too.
Yeah. And so it's a strange world again, because we go from this time period where, yes, and as I said, look, I didn't believe anything anymore. I didn't know what to believe. And in fact, that is a great weapon, because at a certain point, if you can't believe anything, then you can't believe in anything. Even if you independently true. Come to it, right? Even if you educate yourself, now you're questioning every single bit of it. And how do they do this? They mix some reality. It's not like they're just showing you Bugs Bunny and telling you that's how the way the world works. Okay, because anybody would go outside of their house and say, well, I can't draw a circle on the ground and jump into the hole, can I? You know what I mean? It's just very simple, easy to test. But if they tell you some lies and then they give you some of the truth, now you can prove that some of what they're saying must be true. And you kind of go, well, you know, this is true. Okay, that makes sense. You know, the world would like to cooperate with one another. That's a good idea if we all cooperated with one another. Now, their version of cooperate is cooperate under the banner of world government. But... that's not what it sounds like. Not world government, but literally, if we all cooperated with each other, and I think that was part of the counterculture that was introduced too, where they said, you know, if we all just hate to quote Rodney King here, but if we all just get along, you know,
yeah.
And that's true. I mean, Jordan, let's be honest. If we did, as individuals, as free thinking people, decided we're just going to get along. We're not going to battle one another for everything. If we made that decision and acted accordingly, yes, indeed, the world would be a better place. But it doesn't mean that we all have to go under one rule that somebody else who has nothing to do with you, has never met you, has no idea about your life circumstances, doesn't even live in the same reality as you, making the decisions for you. That is not right. That is not a choice. It's not even the illusion of choice. And I argue that although the program was slowly coming into existence at the time when you were younger, I think that it wasn't obvious. It was slowly coming in. It was being done so that you still had the illusion of choice in some cases. And what you started to discover as you matured, it seems to me, and tell me I'm wrong, if I'm wrong, is that, you know, you started to mature and you said, wait a minute, things don't quite work like they should, and they don't work like they're describing them. You know, they tell us about civics class and how that's supposed to work. And, you know, on some level, again, there's some truth, but there's a whole lot of lies built into the description. And I think that at first it wasn't as obvious. And as time has gone on here, over the course of your now 81 years, and certainly over the course of my nearly 50, now there's just less trying to be sneaky about it, less trying to hide it. It's more obvious. And still, it's remarkable to me that the people that didn't notice back then, when it was a much softer grip from that snake trying to squeeze us, still, if they were alive today, would not notice this either. And that is the big trick here. That is the Hollywood magic, so to speak, that comes from a lot more places than just Hollywood. Do I sound like I'm making sense to you, Jordan?
Yes, you're making a lot of sense to me.
Hmm.
If you could have met some of the people I have met some of the most important people in the world that make the decisions for us to live by. And you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have a vague hint, but I don't know it all. I don't know everything you know, that's for sure. And, you know, in the next hour, I just want to prepare you, Jordan. A bunch of questions are here about Freemasons and symbols there. And before we take a break, because I want to take a little break, give you a chance to get a drink or whatever it is you need before we get into listener questions. I actually want to ask you one that just popped up that somebody kind of I love when they do this, because I'll ask Jordan anything that is within reason. I'm not afraid to ask him a question. I'm not afraid to ask anybody a question. That's part of who I am, okay? The guy kind of gives a hint that I would not ask you this question, so I'm making it a point that, yeah, I'm going to ask you the question. And he basically says that I bet you will not ask Jordan if... I mean, I almost feel like this is funny, because I know I've addressed this with you before, but, I can make a joke here. Have you ever been, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? You know, but no, that's not the question, Jordan. The question actually is, the listener wants to know if you are or ever have been a Freemason.
If I have ever been a Freemason?
Yes, sir.
I have read in the articles about Freemasonry what a Freemason is expected to do. Mm-hmm. And because of that, all I have ever done was the work of a Freemason, because they are supposed to be revolutionary, radical, and think different, and require the help of their fellow brothers and friends. Mm-hmm. to confront government, to confront criminals, and to do things that other people don't do. Well, that's been my whole life. I have always wanted to be free and think different and just be different.
Right.
I've always wanted that, and I always have wanted that. So that's why I do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing the work of a Freemason. But now, today, that is immediately understood as an answer. Yes, I am a Freemason.
Fair enough.
But no, I am not a Freemason. I am doing the work of a Freemason.
So in other words, you're not on a member list. You're not technically part of the organization as people would know it. But your behaviors fall in line with the prescription there, which is that there's supposed to be good works done, and
yes,
you're supposed to educate, and of course you have a belief in a higher power. This is part of being a Freemason. In other words, you do fit the qualifications, but you're not on a member list anywhere. You're not, you know, some high level controller or anything like this. You're just a man who is doing his best to educate people with whatever time it is he has here, and has gone out of his way to seek rarefied information and present it to people for now more than five decades, easily, consistently, that amount of time, and with very little reward, and perhaps with a bunch of ridicule and people attempting to take advantage of you, no matter what your good intentions and good works were. Am I accurate, sir?
That is absolutely accurate. Absolutely.
There you go. So, but this guy was thinking, I'm not even going to, you won't even ask him this. Yeah, well, I can ask, I'll ask Jordan anything that is within reason. Really, I will. So that's what we're going to do in the next hour. And there's a few questions about Freemasonry. And I might want to ask you a little bit about the Freemason Bible, which I've seen. I don't have one, and you're not supposed to even see this if you're not technically part of the inner whatever, but I know, Jordan, you've seen the what they call the Freemason's Bible, the very...
Yes, I have. I've seen it. I've gone all through it, and right. I understand why they call it a Freemason's Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of the concepts and ideas in world Freemasonry are in the Bible.
Right. So they have this very, very fancy-looking And I don't know who they issue it to, but I know that they issue some of them directly to members. They even have their names on these, right, which are printed on the book. They actually stamp their names on it somehow. I don't know how they do it, but I know who's I got to see and why. I got to go through it for a little bit, and I got to tell you, it's a very interesting. I love books, by the way, Jordan. I don't know if I ever told you. I love physical books. And so
I do too.
It's, you know, objectively, it's kind of a beautiful book. The way that they make these things, it's bound in a very nice way. I mean, it's a very fancy, I mean, old world kind of book that you would expect to survive and be in good shape for hundreds of years. I don't know how long these things last or what they do with them. After somebody passes away, I've heard stories about how they have to be collected, and I don't know where they go. I don't know if they destroy them. But I know that they're very rare books, and only somebody who is an official member is supposed to ever see these. But I've gotten to see plenty of things I wasn't supposed to see in my life. I know you have too, Jordan. So I might ask you some questions about the Freemason Bible. But there are some other questions that that people have related to Freemasonry that I'm collecting up. And again, you can go in the chat room at Ocelli.com, put your question or comment in there. And in the next hour, what I'll do is ask Jordan about the things you put in there. But I might also just see if I've got time to get some of his thoughts on a few key things from the Freemason Bible. Because, again, I don't think I've heard anybody talk to Jordan about this stuff. And I love trying to have different conversations with you, Jordan, because you've done hundreds of radio, TV shows. You know, they've used you on, stuff from the History Channel all the way to Gaia TV, all the way to the Camelot Project. I mean, you've been everywhere. You're in the Zeitgeist movies. I mean, you're all over the place.
That's true.
So I'm always trying to do something a little different with you, and I think that's why you like coming on and talking to me, because it's not just, okay, here he goes, he's going to ask me the same question everybody else does. And I really appreciate your patience and giving me the time to do that. So before we go to break, I want to remind you again that JordanMaxwellShow.com is the only website that is controlled, and really, it's the only website that's Jordan's. His name is out there in a lot of places. You want to go buy something, you want to go make a donation, go to JordanMaxwellShow.com. You want to join the Jordan Maxwell Research Society. A one-time membership fee is over there. You can join that. You can find it through JordanMaxwellShow.com, but I'll also give you the web address directly to go join the Research Society. I am a member also, just so you guys know. It is extremely valuable and well worth more than what it is you're being charged to join. Okay, I think it's like $30 for a lifetime membership. Last I checked, and I don't think they raised the price. His webmaster actually controls that, but Jordan endorses it fully as part of it, has put the information in there, and there's a ton of stuff. Videos, books, audios, links, discussions, documents, photographs, you name it. Tons and tons of stuff in there. Yeah, go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of pictures and documents.
Oh, yes.
Especially documents.
Well, that's the big key. Like I said, I love books, but also I spend a lot of time going through documents on all sorts of things. And there are documents in there that are not just government documents, by the way. It's not like just a repository of government documents. There are tons, although there are some government documents in there, you know, stuff that's been declassified. Jordan shows you proof about some of the things he says. And some of the things are collected together so that you can study a particular area. And indeed, you might have to look at some of the government's documentation to understand what the hell it is they're doing. So, you know, that is there, but it's not the only thing that's there. A wide variety of stuff. But again, like I said, you can email Jordan over there. You can make a contribution to him. And are you still taking people to email you for the birthday party, which is only, 5 days away now, right?
Yeah, only about 5 days away. Yeah.
Okay. So that
it's going to be in Los Angeles. So anybody in Los Angeles that wants to know about my birthday party, it very well might be my last birthday party.
Well, let's not say that.
If you'd like to.
I don't like that, Jordan. I don't want it to be your last. But let's be realistic. It's Jordan's 81st birthday party and a rare opportunity if you're going to be in the Los Angeles area or you want to make it there in the next 5 days. I really wish I could. I don't have the ability to get from Georgia to there. I just, you know, I can't. But I really wish I could. So if you're able to, you the listener, able to get there, I would. And the way to do that is to email officialjordanmaxwell@protonmail.com. You can send an email. You were giving out the phone number, too. Do you still want to do that?
Yes. It's 760-777-2650. Again, for Jordan Maxwell's birthday party, call 760-777-2650.
Right. And you can leave a voicemail there if you like, and whatever. If you get a hold of somebody right away, that's good. But those are the two ways that you can go on the 28th of December, 2021, because you know this podcast will be around. Somebody might be trying to call you next year. But this is the plan for this year. We'll see what 2022 holds, okay? Right, Jordan? I mean, you can't plan next year's birthday. Let's get through this one. But if you want to make that phone call or send in that email, that's how you could if you're going to be in the Los Angeles, California area. Go ahead and do something that I wish I could do, which is sit down with Jordan Maxwell and meet him at his birthday. He said, look, you know what? If you want to talk to me at my birthday party about stuff, I'll answer questions. You could go right in person. And personally, if I was going, I would want a picture with you. Do you mind people taking pictures with you, Jordan?
No, I don't mind at all.
So I would get a picture with Jordan if I could. I'll tell you. So, again, the number is 760-777-2650. And if you want to, email officialjordanmaxwell@protonmail.com. And I'm going to give you all these links in with the show notes. So it'll be there, plus Jordan's website, the Research Society, all of it. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to deal with all the listener questions, which you still have time to do if you want to go in the chat room at Ocelli.com. Send me a message. Send it to me on Twitter. However it is you get it to me, I will ask Jordan. And this is the last appearance of 2021 of Jordan Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. So stick around. We'll be back after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
In denial. Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all powerful people.
Now, and now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck Ocelli.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now, and my very special and returning guest on the show, Jordan Maxwell. I've done a lot of shows with Jordan, and there's absolutely no end to the things that I want to talk to him about. So I've tried to do a different show tonight where we went through the progression of what is, and maybe we'll discuss some of the modern world as it stands, and we'll maybe go back in time a little bit again to some of the earlier points in Jordan's life and how he saw the world and how the world changed and how maybe his worldview changed over time. But before we get there, there's a lot of questions you guys have put in. A couple of them are repetitious, a couple of them about Freemasonry, a few other things here. So we'll try and get to all of it in this hour. If you put it in the chat room at Ocelli.com, or you send it to me on Twitter, or you email info@Ocelli.com, I will do my level best to enter all the questions into the discussion. Comments even that are relevant to the discussion with Jordan Maxwell tonight, so you can get involved live just like that. Anyway, Jordan, I know we're gonna talk again about the website before we're done. We'll get there toward the end because I want to get straight away to some of these questions. The first one is about how the swastika, and we all know what a swastika is, I'm sure. How it relates to the imagery of the black sun and how it is that this is utilized by Freemasons at certain points. And again, there's a lot of sun imagery in the adornments, even that Bible that I mentioned before we closed out the first hour. There was a whole lot of different depictions of the sun on I don't know, almost every page that had a image on it, seemed like a lot of suns in the Freemasonry Bible, the way it's decorated. But that's not the point here. What is with the use of that symbol and how the Freemasons have used it? And of course, the swastika in and of itself, we all know what, you know, the immediate knee-jerk reaction is for it. But you and I have discussed this before, and the fact that even the floors of synagogues are adorned with these swastikas. So let's talk about what all that means and why the Freemasons use that symbol and these overlapping symbols, Jordan.
Well, I remember a lecture given at one of the conferences I was attending. And I heard a lecture given by a friend of mine. And he explained that on the wall of this temple in Egypt was written a story. I never heard of this. But there was a story that was written on the wall of this temple. And the story explained that Pharaoh Akhenaten was walking down the aisle, was walking down the flow of the Nile River by himself one day. And he looked up over his head, and there was a steel or metal circular object obviously it must have been a what we would call a flying saucer, a UFO. And the voices within that saucer-shaped thing began to talk to the Pharaoh and told him to turn around and go back to Cairo because he was going to found a new religion. They wanted him to found a new religion, and they said the new religion will have a symbol. And it will be a symbol of a sunrise over a mountain range. So go back and start a new religion. And he was to, it was to be recur, it was to be reported to be an Akhenaten. Aton, A-T-O-N, Aton. And now Aton was a sun god of Egypt. Right. A very important god of the sun in Egypt was Aton. And so today, they told the Pharaoh to go back and start a religion called the Aton. And they said they will make that religion, if he will found it, they will make that religion the most important symbol on the earth. And he did that. He went back and founded a new religion called the Aton. And today, Jews all over the world will tell you that it is not good for you to use the name of God. Mm-hmm. You cannot use the name of God because it is misusing his name. Right. If you want to know his real name. But there is a name that refers to the God that is all right to use in Judaism. It's called a tetragrammaton. Tetragrammaton is right. Tetra, mm-hmm. meaning four. Gram, G-R-A-M-M, is a letter, like A, B, C, D, E, is a letter. So therefore, tetragram is four Hebrew letters for the Aton, A-T-O-N, tetragram Aton. Mm-hmm. Four Hebrew letters to show you who the gods are in Egypt. And the Aton was the most important symbol that Pharaoh Akhenaten decided to paint as his god of his religion. Mm. Was the Aton, and they told him that we will make that Aton, we will make him the most important god of all gods on the earth. Right. If you will declare that the Aton is the sun god of Egypt, and he is the most important god, we will make sure that he is respected as the most high god. And that's what happened. Right. And so that's what exactly what happened. Pharaoh Akhenaten was a follower of the god Aton, A-T-O-N, which is the sun god of Egypt. And if you go on the web today, and look at the pictures on the web for the Aton, A-T-O-N. Aton was the most powerful god in all of religion, in all the world today. Right. The Aton is still the most powerful symbol today. And Pharaoh was right. The Aton is the sun god of Egypt.
Okay, so now a question which has come along with this while you were speaking is interesting, and I've never heard this asked before, so I want to get to it. That first one was from a guy calls himself, I forgot what he called himself here. I may not identify who asked the question. I'm just going to ask the questions, guys, okay? Because I got them gathered together. The thing is this. The word atomic, and the idea that the atom, A-T-O-M, right, is the most basic particle in all things. And that we are all somehow, he uses the word imbued here. I'm not sure if the word imbued is right, but I get your meaning. Anyway, if we are all imbued with the light of God, so to speak, is it not true that they've sort of hidden in plain sight the idea that at the atomic level, this can be seen because the atom itself is the core of all things that were created by God. That's how he asked the question. But linking to the word aton here, he's asking, is atom, because M's and N's seem to get switched around, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess he's asking about that. What are your thoughts there? Is that hidden in plain sight? Part of the, listen, at the most basic level, at the atomic level, even the most powerful weapon on the planet, the atomic bomb. This all has to do with the greatest power, the light that actually comes from God. What is your thought about that?
Well, it's aton, A-T-O-N, not atom, A-T-O-M. Mm-hmm. But it's talking about the same thing. And therefore, the atom is the sun god of Egypt. I gave a lecture that is... I gave a lecture that was in Laughlin, Nevada, mm-hmm. which is about 50 miles south of Las Vegas on the river. And I gave a lecture on the atom. Mm-hmm. You should see it. It's quite impressive.
Is that at the same conference where they gave you that award?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you guys a link to that. The conference where he got the award, and I'll put it in the show notes just so you guys can go back and take a look and listen. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I want them to do that later, so I'm going to give that to them in the show notes. Okay, Jordan. So another question here. This one's a little. This is unrelated to the Mason thing, but we'll get back to the Masons in a minute. It has to do with what you were talking about in the first hour. Which is, what is Jordan's thoughts on the recent releases of videos of UFOs? Does he think those are real, or are they just there to distract us from the truth about extraterrestrials?
No, I think they are real, and they are part of something that we would call the devil and his demons. Mm-hmm. I believe, and there's a reason for it, I believe that the devil and his demons are referred to in the Bible as an extraterrestrial group of demonic entities in the heavens. And so we are confronted by the devil and his demons. And I think that's why the demons are coming back today in their extraterrestrial vehicles, mm-hmm. to see us and how we are reacting and what are we going to do and what's happening with us. And they're interested to find out if the whole world has accepted their image of God as a sun god of Egypt, the Aton. Right. And so... that's today all over the whole earth. The Aton is worshipped as the main god of Israel. Right. Tetragram Aton.
Right.
Aton is the sun god of Egypt. And so today they have accepted, the whole world has accepted the Aton. On the badges and flags of all the countries of the world is the sun. The sun is Aton. Right. And he is called the Tetragram Aton.
Well, if you think about the shiny badges you see anywhere, you know, what do they look like? They look like the sun. They are kind of cartoonish a little bit. But, you know, because the sun...
You're right.
But
you're right.
It's... still, they're all the sun. That's what they are.
Yes.
That bestows yes. authority upon them. That's the symbol, and that's why they're shiny even, Jordan, right?
That's exactly correct. The Los Angeles Police Department has a badge officers wear which has a sunrise mm-hmm. over the top of the badge of sunrise. Well, and that is a symbol that they told Pharaoh they were going to enforce and make the people accept it.
Right.
And they have.
You know, and just saying, if you look at a lot of the badges of authority, what do they all have in common? They're shiny. Many of them, if not most of them, have something to do with the sun, either a sunset or a sunrise, a sunburst. Even when you look at the logos of these police departments in places where you might not even get a lot of sun. I mean, Seattle, Washington, it's raining all the time. But their badges are good and shiny and look like suns, don't they? Anyway, it's just part of the symbols all around us. All right. So another question, which has come in here, and this one, I'm going to combine two things here because, okay, first of all, I always hate asking this question, but I'm going to do it. do the Freemasons believe in a flat earth? Number one, and number two, what does Jordan think about the flat earth?
Not much. Hmm. I think you have to be kind of flat yourself to understand the flat earth. Hmm. I think the Jesuits have introduced the flat earth to humanity centuries and centuries ago. It was a belief in the church that we're living on a flat earth. Hmm. I do not believe the earth is flat. I do not believe the earth is flat at all. I believe it is circular, it's rounded, like all the other planets in the universe. All planets are circular and circles, and this is why we shine our earth sign on the moon. The moon looks like some sort of a circle was being imposed on the picture of the sun and the moon. And that's because we are a circle. We're not flat. Right. I don't believe we're flat. So that's the name of that tune.
Fair enough. And there is actually a question about the moon. Despite the fact that this is the way the question is, this isn't my question, Jordan. Okay. I have my opinions about this. I'm going to keep them to myself, but they're asking you. So here's the thing. Many gods which are discussed in the Bible and other religious texts all have a tie to the moon. There are many moon gods. Okay.
That's what
he says. And so he asks, however, I have always felt that the moon may have been artificial, maybe not man-made, but made by someone outside of the normal line of creation. How is it that the gods are tied to something that is artificial, or am I wrong? That's exactly the way the question is worded. Sorry about that.
No, you're not wrong. You're right. You're correct. But I believe that in Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. In fact, it does not say that in Hebrew. It doesn't say God created the heavens and the earth at all. It doesn't say that. I'm sorry.
Right.
You have to go back to Genesis 1:1, and the word for God is Elohim. Elohim is a word translated from the Hebrew to mean many gods.
Right.
And we are the many gods. G-O-D-S, the different gods. And so we're told that the different gods said, come, let us. Who in the world is us? Come, let us create man. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say man. It says HTM. It doesn't say Adam, A-D-A-H-M. Mm-hmm. So we say first man was Adam. Right. No, his name was not Adam. A-D-A-M. And so, in the beginning, God, the gods, created the heavens and the earth.
Well, let me take you back to something here, because you're saying that, no, it doesn't say that God created. I think there's not only a problem with the plural of God there in the original text, but there's a problem with created, because it seems to me, now, again, I'm not an expert on Hebrew, but attempting to do this with translations and things, it appears to me as though it is being formed from something. In other words, it wasn't just poof, I brought it into existence. There is the heavens and the earth are formed from this other thing, which some people have translated into the word firmament, which is not exactly, you know, and some people say, oh no, that's just the earth. The earth is firm and the sky is not, you know, okay. But I don't think that's true. It seems to me as though somebody said, look, we're going to take things, and man is an example of this as well. We're going to take stuff and we're going to form it into. It's not creation out of nothing. There's this thing here, and we're going to take this, you know, much like you would take metal from the ground, and you would smelt it and form it into metal, right? And therefore, yeah, right. You could shape it. And not only is man created in this way in the description, the way I read it, but also, guess what? The earth. And the heavens, as described, which is another kind of a confusing word, the heavens is not necessarily the old concept of heaven, but the sky above. And that's a lot of stuff to do, but it's like, it's all being formed from something that was already there. Now, I'm not saying that the narrator in the story doesn't create that at some point, but we don't have that in the story. We have, there's this thing here, and we're going to make it into the heavens and the earth. And then a few days later, according to the description, you know, what is it, the sixth day, right? Man is created. Well, man is made, let's say. Even there, it's not poof, I'm making something out of nothing. It's that we're going to put some things together here and we're going to create. I mean, much like you and I would have to, if we wanted to make a knife from the earth, we wanted to make a steel knife, we'd have to take the minerals and, you know, work with them a bit, heat them up, shape them, and then we could make a knife from the earth, literally. But we didn't create it out of thin air. We reformed it. We terraformed, if it was the earth, we terraformed it. If we formed something else from it, well, we took a material, just like cutting down a tree and making it into a table. A tree is not a table. You have to take it, work with it, and shape it. And it sounds to me like, my reading of it, maybe I'm wrong, is that that's what's going on here. The earth itself, the heavens, all this stuff being described as being created is being formed from something that we don't know where it came from in the story because it was already there. Am I right or wrong about that, Jordan?
It begins to sound like it. I think you're probably right.
I mean, again, I'm not saying that the person creating and working with these things didn't, or the god, small god or gods or whatever, I'm not saying that they didn't create the firmament that existed before, but according to the story, if you have to just go with the story, this thing is already there, and we're going to reshape it. And even the later creation of, you know, the general story of, okay, so from man, we're going to take part of him, and we're going to create the woman, right? Even then, yeah. You're taking something that's there already, and you're reforming it. So does it sound more like that, almost like things being crafted, as opposed to just, you know, all right, poof, it exists, poof, it exists?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just, that's the way I read it, not just man, though, but even the heavens and the earth, which are created earlier on in the story, are the same way. We're taking this and we're making it this way. So you think that's right?
I think that begins to sound all right.
Okay.
It answers many questions. And It's a man. There are two men that were founded. It doesn't say God created man. Doesn't say that in the scriptures. If you get the Hebrew Bible and read it in Hebrew, Genesis 1:1 doesn't say in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth and created man, because man is a Hebrew word, ish, I-S-H, is man in Hebrew, ish, and God is El in Hebrew. So we would expect it to say, and El created ish, but it doesn't say El created ish. It says God created man. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say God created ish. But them ish is a man. And it says God created Elohim. They were Elohim. They were the small gods in relation, but there was a group of them. And we are told they said to themselves, come, let us make Adam to look like us and to be like us. Let's make him like us, so that eventually they had to create a creature that looked like them and acted like them, which means the gods were creating a creature that was about as crazy as we are. And that's about the bottom line, as they have created a creature like them. And they are about as crazy as we are, we humans.
Right. No, absolutely.
And that's scary.
Yeah. It certainly is. And speaking of scary, there's a personal question here. I don't know if this has ever been asked of you again. I don't remember it being asked of you directly, but have you ever seen an extraterrestrial yourself, Jordan?
I think maybe I have. I think maybe I have seen. I've had experiences with other creatures on the earth, and I can tell you they are not like anything you would think you would understand. If you see an extraterrestrial, they are not like a human that you would normally associate with an extraterrestrial. But they are like we are. They look like us, or actually, we look like them. We humans look like the God that created us. They said, come, let us create Adam in our image and our likeness. And so in the image and likeness of the gods, God created mankind. Image means the image, you look like them. And image and likeness. And the likeness, we act like them, which means that we look like and act like the God that created us, Elohim. And so, I don't know where you go with all of that.
No, it's fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. I got you. I'm asking the questions. You're answering them. And I'm plenty happy with the answers so far. I know I'm taking you into a couple of different places, but I can't predict what people are going to ask. So another call back to the first hour where we did start to discuss, or you mentioned, the Kennedy assassination. And they ask a question. I know I've asked you this before, but I'll ask it anyway. You know, do you feel as though the country changed, or the world was literally changed by the Kennedy assassination, which was, this is their wording, which was a ritual sacrifice in public?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I think it was. It was a ritual killing.
Now, does that have anything to do with it being on the 33rd parallel? And, you know, is it is it loaded with symbols of Freemasonry? Now, you've been to Dallas, right? You've been to Dealey Plaza?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about some curious things that are there. There are some towers that are curiously placed. And if one understands the position of the sun in the sky, I don't know what to make of who would have designed this. But the idea that there are some buildings, symbols, and indeed its geographical location that all make sense in a very dark, mystical way, that it may indeed have been pre-planned as exactly the spot for a ritual sacrifice. Now, I don't want to go into too many details on it, but, you know, Jordan, feel free to call me crazy. I've observed this myself, standing there, looking around where things are, where they were, and literally, again, even knowing the longitude and latitude of the location. I think it all plays a significant role and has continued to survive in pop culture in a lot of different ways as well. I point out the idea that, you know, there was a very successful movie franchise called A Nightmare on Elm Street. That's literally the street that Kennedy was killed on. And I can tell you that there's something to the use of the elm tree, the use of particular towers and symbols which have been placed by high-level Masons, okay, in that area. I think it was a perfect spot. And there are many places, in fact, that if you go to certain cities, you can find symbology, interlocking things, symbols on buildings that hardly anybody pays attention to, configurations. Even Washington, D.C., the entire city, the way it's configured, is literally part of a master design. And Dallas has design elements to it that are not like D.C., but are certainly sensible if you were arranging for a dark ritual to occur in Dealey Plaza. So you go ahead and call me crazy if you want, Jordan, but I don't think you will. Does all this sound reasonable to you, and do you have anything you want to add to that about this concept of it being a ritual sacrifice that was meant to be seen by the public, that was meant to be well known, that was meant to be a legend?
Yes, I think you are right. We now know that Vice President Lyndon Johnson was a part of the assassination. And of course, he was a high degree Freemason. He was a part of the assassination plot.
And certainly a well-established criminal.
Yeah, but certainly well-established.
Yeah. Again, and I don't think that Johnson is the guy who created the plot at all. But
no.
I cannot reckon with the idea that he didn't have some knowledge that it was coming. Or that the powers that should not be, that were more than happy to support him and take us into, guess what we talked about in the first hour, the Vietnam War. You know, that definitely became a lot easier as soon as Johnson's superior was removed from the scene. And, you know, one could even say that even wars, Jordan, in some cases are designed, and this is a very high-level discussion, where you can get into the act of war in and of itself is a ritual. And it is meant to soak the ground with blood, and these are very specific things that are arranged by people in power in order to achieve, to appease certain entities on the planet. And I'm being very general about this, but I do believe these things are absolutely... And I know, it's not even just a matter of belief, I know that these things make sense in some very dark corners of the occult psychology that is connected to people in power. So what are your thoughts on that?
I am sure that you are right. There is something in the murder of John Kennedy, which was some sort of a ritual. And we now know that is beginning to look like we now know that.
Mm-hmm. But even the act of sending, you know, the younger, stronger men to be sacrificed, I mean, this is something that was pre-existed most of what we understand as even earlier pagan concepts among, almost every culture. This was something that was there. Nobody talks about it nowadays, though, do they?
No.
I mean, there are rare authors that author, you know, that kind of explore it a bit. But again, it's only the rare individual who will explore these outer reaches of what's actually happening sometimes. And even given that we've had the gift of greater communication in the past couple of decades with the advent of the internet and such, as I said, this information was available even going back to that earlier time in your life, right? Where you were able to go seek out information if you really wanted to put in the effort. You could go find it. You could dig up things in libraries, books that collected dust mostly because nobody wanted to read them. But if you did, and you dug into some of these things, you could learn the real history. You could learn what actually happened. You could read people's preservations of history through stuff like journals, which nobody seems to publish anymore, right? The journals of the real people that were there, because they want to tell you a story. They don't want you to know what it looked like from the perspective of, people that were there. Because they might actually tell you something that doesn't fit the big stories. And that applies, by the way, to the Kennedy assassination, the history of war, the history of our government, the history of the monetary system, the banking. All of it makes sense through that lens, though, doesn't it, Jordan? They don't want you to know the real story, do they?
No, they do not want you to know the real story. And I have physical proof of that. Mm-hmm. It was published in a newspaper in Los Angeles. And they said, in the newspaper, it said, the founding of the Federal Reserve was a part of the communist conspiracy. Mm. It was a communist who instituted the Federal Reserve, who printed our money. And so it was going to be used eventually to destroy the country. Hmm. Well, the Federal Reserve is being used to destroy America. It is actually, in fact, doing just what it was supposed to do. Hmm. That's why we are in trouble today, because we don't realize it's been a long time coming. They founded the Federal Reserve to print America's money, dollar bills. And the dollar bills were actually a bill. Mm-hmm. When you don't pay a bill in America, you discharge a debt. You do not pay a bill.
Well, that's a great point, actually, and something that I we haven't discussed in a long time. It's always interesting to me the words used, right? Because what happens when you owe money? They say, this is the use of the word in America anyway, you know, the English language is kind of a little different in England. But let's work with the American English, right? You pay a bill. What do you pay a bill with? Well, I know everybody uses digital currency at this point, and that's a whole other thing. I wouldn't mind getting your view on that. The fact that, it's just a point of data now is supposed to be currency, and that's a whole other weird thing. But technically speaking, again, going back to those days when you were younger and even when I was a kid, here's the thing. You got dollar bills to pay bills with. Okay, usually the answer to something is not the same thing. You know, you don't answer a disease with more disease. You don't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You don't answer. You don't answer a fire by lighting more fire. It's you have to apply something to a situation to change things that is different than the thing you're addressing, usually, okay?
All right.
So how is it that you pay a bill with dollar bills? Well, the logic that comes to my mind, and I learned later, is that these dollar bills, which, yes, indeed, you can exchange them. You can trade with them. That's true. You can trade them for things, but they're instruments of debt. That's what they are. It's debt. You're using debt to pay debt. You're using bills to pay bills. So with the last,
therefore,
like,
you're getting further and further involved in the banking system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going underwater quick because you're using debt to pay debt. So how do you get anything but debt out of the situation? Sounds like addition, not subtraction. So
that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I mean, I'm thinking out loud, Jordan, but still, it's sounds right, doesn't it? When you're using the same word, I mean. If I told you, okay, you've got a broken window. Well, I'm going to break the window some more. Okay, that doesn't fix my broken window, does it? I'm just saying, how do you apply the same thing to something and expect the result to change? You've just added to the problem.
And that's why we today in America put our money in banks.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's called a river bank. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the currency.
Yeah, but see, a river bank directs the flow of the currency. But the funny thing is, we talk about putting money in a bank where the bank is holding our money. But in reality, a river bank doesn't hold your money. It just controls where it goes.
That's right.
So
that's exactly right.
Kind of truth
where it goes.
A truth is built right into the phrases and terms that are used is the point, right?
Yes.
So there you have it. So before we run out of time, again, I want to remind people that they could, if they wish, join Jordan on his 81st birthday. If you're going to be in the Los Angeles area, and two ways to reach out to Jordan. First, if you'd like, you could email him, and I'm going to give you guys links to this in the show notes. If you want to email him and inquire as to how you can meet him on the 28th of December, there in Los Angeles, California, you can email officialjordanmaxwell@protonmail.com, officialjordanmaxwell@protonmail.com. Now, let's just say you're not a good email guy and you want to just make a phone call. Jordan's got a number for you, 760-777-2650. That number again, 760-777-2650. You can call if you get the voicemail, leave a voicemail. You know, I know either Jordan or somebody on Jordan's behalf will get back to you. And you can meet with him on his 81st birthday there in Los Angeles, California. And wish him a happy birthday in person. Get a picture with him. He said he would take pictures if people want him. You can talk to him directly instead of listening to me talk to him. How about that? So there you have it. And again, I want to remind people that the only website that is Jordan Maxwell's, you may find him on the internet all over the place. people using his name. People maybe selling products that have something to do with him, really not supporting him at all. Never bothering to cut him in on any of the business, if you will. But
no,
there's
no part of it.
But there's only one website that, if you do business on this website, it is Jordan's. And that is JordanMaxwellShow.com. That's the only website that is Jordan's. JordanMaxwellShow, which is all one word, .com. And you can go over there, the Research Society. I'll put the link there in the show notes for that as well, which you can join. And there's a great deal of information contained in there. If you're a member of that club, you know, we talked about Carlin and, you know, there's a big club and you ain't in it. Well, this is not the big club, but this is a big deal and a club you can join. And it might be a small club, but you can be in it. The Jordan Maxwell Research Society, and go over there at jordanmaxwellshow.com. There's a link to it, and I'll give you a separate link if you want to just land right on the Research Society as well. Ton of stuff in there. So with all that having been said, With the last few minutes here, Jordan, and this is the last time that we're going to speak in public anyway, before the new year, I was curious if you had any message you wanted to give to anybody, if you wanted to say in general. I mean, you know, I told everybody about your birthday. I told everybody about the website, so you don't have to do any of that. But, I mean, just in general, if there's something that you want people to remember, to think about as the, you know, as the holiday season comes and goes and we go into a new year, definitely treacherous times if you're in America or, well, frankly, anywhere on spaceship Earth here. You're in treacherous times for sure. Is there anything that you'd like to give as a general message to people? Just, you know, well wish, what they should think about, what they should pay attention to, anything. Anything at all. It's all yours, and I'll leave you to it. What kind of message should you leave people with here at the end of 2021?
Well, I would say that I ask a bishop in the Catholic Church about my father. I told him my father works with torches, and so I work with torches too. He let me play with torches so I can understand how important they are. And so I asked the bishop, I said, if I had a torch and an angel appeared to me, because I have read so many times in the Bible, angels appear to humans. And if an angel appeared to me and I had a torch, could I hit him with my torch? And would it hurt him? And the answer was no. And I said, why not? He said, first of all, the bishop told me, you can't even see an angel, much less burn one. How are you going to burn an angel? There's nothing to burn. You have to have wood, paper, plastic, something that will burn. And so I was told you have to have something that will burn before you can burn an angel. You need something made out of paper or plastic or wood or rubber that can burn. And I said, well, why am I worried about going to hell where my spirit will burn forever if you can't burn a spirit? And the priest looked at me. The bishop looked at me like a deer in the headlights. I was not expecting that kind of a question from a kid. I think I was about 7 years old.
Right.
And so
you're about 7 years old and you put this question to the priest,
the bishop,
yeah. and he just was bewildered by this question.
Totally bewildered.
I can tell you that in 1977, Jordan, I know this because I was 5 years old, and I kind of put this to a minister. I didn't have a bishop in front of me, but I was five, and I was upset about a lot of things. And what I said is, you know, they kind of put it to me, well, you know, God is in this room, God is everywhere, this kind of deal. And and I said angrily, because I was an angry child, I had lost my father a few months before, and I said, you know, well, if he was, then I would hit him with rocks, you know, took my father. Natural response for a small child who's angry. It took them quite a while to try and explain to me, well, you can't hit God with a rock. And it led to a very long conversation with,
I can imagine,
the minister. And it was like, you know, but okay, so what you're telling me is this is not, you don't know how to explain this either, really, is what it came down to.
No.
And it's a different story from yours. You're trying to figure out, Can I light an angel on fire with a torch? Again, kind of an angry thing to do, but same time, valid question, right? What is the lesson from that that you took?
The lesson from that is very simple. No, you cannot hurt an angel with a fire. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he has no body. There is no body to an angel. Therefore, he doesn't have nerve endings, or fire would hurt him.
Right.
And so, therefore, it's just a useless question. No, you can't hurt an angel with a fire. And so that's why I said, well, then, Bishop, why am I to be worried about dying in a position of going to hell where my spirit will burn to death if you can't burn a spirit? And he didn't know what to say. He didn't know how to answer that.
Well, it's funny because that's the same kind of question I asked, is why are we talking about fire? Fire's a thing of this world. And if that's something you can't touch, you can't, well, then that means fire doesn't bother it, does it?
No.
You know,
fire doesn't burn you in hell. That's not what the word hell means. It's a Greek word, sheol. Right. Ask any rabbi, what does Sheol mean? Sheol. Sheol is the word hell in English. And Sheol is not a fire. Sheol is a common grave. So you're going to go to a common grave in the ground. And that's hell. That's why Jesus went to hell. And therefore, he is resurrected. God's Son is resurrected, S-O-N. And so, the word Son, S-U-N, is Anglo-Saxon. It's an Anglo word. Anglo, meaning the King's English is Anglo.
Right.
And Celtic is German. And in German, the word Son, S-U-N, is S-O-N. Therefore, they had to put a man on a cross for humans to be able to relate to what happened to God's Son,
right,
which in point of fact was S-U-N, which we go to church on Sunday, right. S-U-N day, not S-O-N day.
Well, all of that being part of what we've discussed over the years, and all I'm going to say to people is, well, first of all, I want to thank you, Jordan, for taking this time. We're at the end of it, and as we kind of conclude with a discussion of hell here on the Ocelli Effect, I'll say this, just because I'm a bit of a jokester. Merry Christmas, everybody. So, yeah. Jordan, you understand my humor. I gotta have some gallows humor because the world is a dark place, and you know what? I'm not gonna let it make me a dark individual, and I know you won't either. The great Jordan Maxwell, again, jordanmaxwellshow.com, the only website that belongs to the great Jordan Maxwell. The Ocelli Effect is done. Have a good night, everybody.
Dishonest bastards. Bastards.
That's the sound of former leader of the Australian Democrats, Don Chipp, rolling in his grave. His party once kept us protected from them in our federal parliament by keeping the bastards honest. Now, there is no one to represent us in parliament and no one to keep them, the bastards, honest. Don't vote for them again.
Dishonest bastards.
They are not honest. They support attacks on our lives, our businesses, our privacy, our human rights, and now they support attacking our children. It truly is us or them. Who can stop this madness? The truth is, only
us. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
By author Mike Swanson.